I'm excited tonight to return to the story of Joseph and his brothers in Egypt. You probably say, I say that every sermon, don't I? You know, to be honest with you, I really feel that way. Not because I get to preach, although that is a great privilege, but because the Word of God is powerful. And there's something in every verse of the Bible, I think. There's something in every story. And sometimes we feel that, and other times we might read the Bible and it just doesn't quite grip us. I feel that way sometimes. But I'm thankful for the Word of God. And we have the privilege tonight to be here and to look into God's Word and to be together. Is that something to be thankful about? I hope so. I hope so. Well, we started this story last time we were together 2 weeks ago in Genesis chapter 42. Tonight, if you're going to follow along with me, it's a long reading, and we're going to look at this story. I told you last time that this story is a story about forgiveness, about reconciliation, and especially as I think about it and I read this story, it is a story about how we deal with our feelings when we've been deeply wronged. How do we deal with hurts that are deep? There's some stories in the Bible that just kind of highlight that and take us back to that place and maybe give us an opportunity to think and to look into the lives of Bible characters to see what maybe we can learn from them. Maybe we can learn how to do it. Maybe we can learn how not to do it. But we can always learn as we look at the stories in the Bible. And Joseph is one of those characters that has a lot to teach us. Joseph had been deeply wronged by his brothers. Not that he didn't have a role in that or a part in that, but he had been sold into slavery at the age of 17, hated by his brothers, taken to a land, Egypt, away from his family, ripped away from his father who loved him so much, and he loved his father so much, ripped away and sold into slavery and taken to Egypt. And even then in Egypt, he seemed to have a heart that wanted to honor God, and he worked for Potiphar, and he was doing a great job, and Potiphar was so happy with him, and then he was falsely accused by Potiphar's wife and went back to prison and languished in prison for more years, and then finally got his opportunity at the age of 30. Rose up out of prison having interpreted Pharaoh's dreams and became the second strongest leader in Egypt. God raised him up and gave him great gifts and abilities and discernment and talent and ability, and he used them well. And he rose to the place of being the second in all of Egypt. And many years passed. And then at least he would have been probably 37 years old to 40 or after that. All of a sudden, on one day in his life, his brothers come back into his world, into his scene, and he's faced with decisions to make about what do I do about these brothers? What do I do about the hurt in my life? What do I do about the pain? What do I do about the opportunity to take vengeance on them? Joseph had a number of emotions that he had to deal with, and God helped him. It is a long story. I said last time that we would take the story in three sections. And I've revised that now to four. So after I went through that story again, and there's no way I can talk about all the details in this story in three sermons. So at least we're going to four. To be fair, Joseph took a long time to work through his problems. And you know what? That just reminds me when we're dealing with being hurt, when we're dealing with issues where we've been wronged, it's a process and it takes time. Sometimes we expect people to snap right out of it and get through it, and get over it, and get past it. But it's a process, and Joseph reminds me of that. It was a process that he went through in dealing with it. The truth is, forgiveness is a process. Sometimes a very long one it was for Joseph. 17 years and whatever time elapsed between the end of chapter 42 and 43, did Joseph deal with his feelings about what had happened to him? Well, let's read. I'm going to read a long passage tonight. Again, I've divided up the story into four sections, but still it's a long passage. So if you want to, open your Bible and follow along, or just sit back and listen to the story. But I'm going to ask you to do something. After I read the story, I want you to comment on what speaks to your mind and your heart from this story. So be looking for something that gets your attention, and we'll start there after I read this story. I'd like you to engage the story. You know, it's one thing for the preacher to stand up here and talk for 45 minutes, and preachers are capable of doing that, but what's even more important is that you engage the story. And you say, God, what do you say to me in this story? And I want to encourage you to do that and give you opportunity to do that. Chapter 42, I'm going to begin reading at verse 27, and I'm going to read all the way to the end of chapter 43. It is a long reading. Chapter 42, beginning reading at verse 27. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey. And he saw the silver in the mouth of his sack. My silver has been returned, he said to his brothers. Here it is in my sack. Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other, trembling, and said, what is this that God has done to us? When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. They said, the man who is Lord over the land spoke harshly to us and treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, we are honest men. We are not spies. We were 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more, and the youngest is now with our father in Canaan. Then the man who is Lord over the land said to us, this is how I will know whether you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me and take food for your starving households and go. But bring your youngest brother to me so I will know that you are not spies but honest men. Then I will give your brother back to you and you can trade in the land. As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was the pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, you have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me. Then Reuben said to his father, you may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you and trust him to my care, and I will bring him back. But Jacob said, my son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he's the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow. Now the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. But Judah said to him, the man warned us solemnly, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother along with us, we will go down and buy food for you. But if you will not send him, we will not go down, because the man said to us, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. Israel asked, why did you bring this trouble on me by telling the man you had another brother? They replied, the man questioned us closely about ourselves and our family. Is your father still living? He asked us. Do you have another brother? We simply answered his questions. How were we to know he would say, bring your brother down here? Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy along with me and we will go at once, so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee this safety, his safety. If you can hold me personally responsible, you can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, if we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice. Then their father, Israel, said to them, if it must be, then do this. Put some of the best products of the land in your bags and take them down to the man as a gift. A little balm, a little honey, some spices and myrrh, some pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double the amount of silver with you, for you must return the silver that was put back into the mouths of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and go back to the man at once. And may God Almighty grant you mercy before the man so that he will let your other brother and Benjamin come back with you. As for me, if I am bereaved, I am bereaved. So the men took the gifts and double the amounts of silver and Benjamin also. They hurried down to Egypt and presented themselves to Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my house, slaughter an animal and prepare dinner there to eat with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told him and took the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were frightened. When they were taken to his house, they thought, we were brought here because of the silver that was put back into our sacks the first time. He wants to attack us and overpower us and seize us as slaves and take our donkeys. So they went up to Joseph's steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house. Please, sir, they said, We came down here the first time to buy food, but at the place where we stopped for the night, we opened our sacks and each of us found his silver, the exact weight, in the mouth of his sack. So we have brought it back with us. We have also brought additional silver with us to buy food. We don't know who put our silver in our sacks. It's all right, he said. Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given you treasure in your sacks. I received your silver. Then he brought Simeon out to them. The steward took the men into Joseph's house, gave them water to wash their feet, and provided fodder for their donkeys. They prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were to eat there. When Joseph came home, they presented to him the gifts that had brought into the house, and they bowed down before him to the ground. He asked them how they were, and then he said, "How is your aged father you told me about? Is he still living?" They replied, "Your servant, our father, is still alive and well." And they bowed low to pay him honor. And he looked about and saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son. He asked, "Is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. After he had washed his face, he came out, controlling himself, said, "Serve the food." They served him by himself, the brothers by themselves, and the Egyptians ate with him by themselves, because Egyptians could not eat with Hebrews, for that was detestable to the Egyptians. The men had been seated before him in the order of their ages, from the firstborn to the youngest, and they looked at each other in astonishment. When portions were served to them from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's. So they feasted and drank freely with him. Wow, what a story. We're only halfway through it, too. What do you think? What gets your attention? Joseph at that time. Yep. Yep. Probably had makeup. You know, the idea the Egyptian leaders had eye and hair stuff. So it is. You would think they would recognize his voice, too. Not only his looks, but his voice. Closed their eyes. Yep. It's possible. It had been a long time. It had been at least 24 years since they had seen him. Yeah, earlier it said that he did speak Egyptian, so they wouldn't understand him. Yep, no, that's a good point. I bet Joseph looked very Egyptian. He did not look like a Hebrew. Yes, yes. That's part of the story from beginning to end. Yeah, how brokenhearted Jacob still is at losing his son. And I noticed when I read it, I don't know if I can find it quickly, but I hadn't thought about or put that in here. And he said, "He is my only son, my only one left, Benjamin." What he meant was, he's the only son of my favorite wife. But he's my only son left. And there were the other 10. Wonder how they felt about that. You know. What else gets your attention? I wonder at what point he did, and I thought that too. He doesn't know what to do about it, but he's forgiven him. Sometimes that's the issue we have when people hurt us. We choose to forgive because we know it's the right thing to do, but it doesn't always fix the feelings. We don't always get over it, but we make the choice to forgive, and I kind of feel like that's the way it was with Joseph. He chose to forgive, but he didn't know how to face him. Yeah, he didn't have a plan. He didn't have an overall plan what to do. He didn't know what to do, I don't think. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We know how he reacted, but how to do this? How to make right with my brothers? How to do this? It's a real story lesson. Anybody else? I hadn't thought of that. I have thought about why five? What's significant about five? But I haven't thought about that. Maybe they were going to see how the brothers reacted to that. If the same old brother came up in them that they saw before. Anybody over here? You guys are pretty quiet. Yeah. I think what Ralph said, those sons were struggling with their guilt through this whole thing, I think. Anybody else? Yeah. Yep. He was. Yeah. Yeah. And he did test them to prove it in what they did. Yep. Yep. The first time they left Simeon behind. Yes. Yes. No, I think they figured they didn't know what to do. If they knew if they went back without Benjamin, that this man said that they would never see him and they would, you know, presumably they would be punished if they came back without the son, you know. So they're at a dilemma. Then Jacob, you know, no, I can't let Benjamin go. So those boys had another dilemma. What do they do? What do they do? When they ran out of food and they got hungry, then they finally talked their dad into saying, okay, we'll go back. Well, these are some things that get my attention and I'm thinking about. Number one, Joseph, of course, is a man of many emotions. What they were and, you know, how he dealt with them, we just see the emotion in him, pain, sorrow, longing. We don't see anger in him. He had to have been angry at some point, but hurt. Maybe wanting so much to be reconnected to his family. All those things, but he was a man of many emotions. The reason I say that that's obvious is that we're emotional people. When we are hurt, we're emotional people. And we can't always control what we feel. Can't always control what comes into our minds and we think about. And this story reminds me of that. Joseph was dealing with something that he didn't write the script, but he lived in it and he lived through it and he had to deal with it and he had to make choices about what he was going to do. He also has been shown to be a man of integrity. Throughout everything we know about Joseph, he's been a man of integrity from the beginning with Potiphar and being in prison and with a cupbearer and then with Pharaoh. He has been shown to be a man that's dependable, a man who is a strong leader, and a man who, most importantly, has maintained his faith in God. And so he has been a man of strong faith. He has continued to trust God in the darkest times of his life, in the difficult times of his life. He has trusted God. He's kept his mind and his heart on God. And that maybe is a key for how Joseph was able to forgive and able to come through as Joseph continued to have a strong faith. And when you've been hurt, if you don't have a strong faith, how much harder it is to be able to forgive. But Joseph was a man with a very strong faith and he found it within himself to be able to forgive. Joseph, as one of you mentioned, does seem to be testing his brothers. He's testing their motives. He's testing their story. He's testing their honesty. I think just as you said, I think he's testing their loyalty. He's testing to see, are they the same they were before? I mean, and if they were, and if they hadn't changed, then maybe Joseph's decision might be, well, I forgive them, but I will never tell them who I am and we'll never reconcile. We'll never be together. I mean, sometimes when we forgive people, we can't force them to reconcile. We can't force them into relationship. We choose to forgive, but we can't control what someone else does. And in this case, the brothers had changed, and there was a reconciliation. But not every time we have an issue of forgiveness is there ability to reconcile. It does take two parties to do that. So there's a big difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. Both are important. Both are important that we are teachable by the Holy Spirit about issues and conflicts in our lives, but we understand that there's a difference between the two. There can be forgiveness without there being reconciliation. And for Joseph and his brothers, they both found a path in order to find that forgiveness. And and reconciliation. You could also say that Joseph, not only is he testing his brothers, but he's stalling. He's not sure what to do, as also one of you mentioned. That's the way I look at it too. Maybe he's waiting for God to show him what to do. Maybe he's waiting for his brothers to say the right thing. Maybe he's waiting for him to get himself under control emotionally so that he can respond the way that he knows that he should. But one thing that I acknowledge about this story is all along the way, I notice that Joseph takes care of his brothers. He doesn't abuse them. I mean, other than, if you would say, he accuses them of being spies, and he does this ruse about the silver in the sack. And so if you might say he mistreated him there, I can understand that. But underneath all that, everything Joseph does is to take care of his brothers. He makes sure they have grain. He makes sure that they have food to go back, and he doesn't want their silver. He takes care of them. He works to supply them. He speaks harshly. He speaks threateningly, but he works to supply them and to protect them. And that's evident through all these long five chapters about this story. He, I believe, you could say, is watching out for his brothers. He doesn't want them to know it. He doesn't want them to know yet, or maybe ever at that point, that he is going to take care of them, but he does do that. He does the right thing. It's not easy, but he does the right thing. He does the right thing in that he does take care of his family, and he forgives. There's also, as one of you mentioned, the turmoil that I notice in this story within the brothers. They too are dealing with emotions. You know, we see clearly Joseph's emotions, but these brothers are having some pretty strong emotions too. They're having emotions. They're having emotions of grief. They're having emotions of guilt. They're having the aftermath of living with a lie and how that lie has affected the family, how that lie is never taken away. It's there for 20 years, 24 years. They're living a lie and they know it. And you can see throughout the story that they're dealing with that. They're dealing with their emotions, but they're also dealing with what they had done that was wrong. And of course, back in the Old Testament, it's kind of a different understanding of confession and repentance. And God knew their heart, though. God knew whether or not they were sorry for what they did. And they were living with a sense that they had done wrong. But they also seem to be living with a sense of God's judgment throughout this long story. As one of you said, verse 28, I think, comes to my mind. It says, "My silver has been returned to me," he said to my brothers. "Here it is in my sack." Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other, trembling, and said, "What is this God has done to us?" I mean, what is this God has done to us? They don't even think about it could be a ruse or it could be a trick or it could be anything, but God's done that to us. Going back, way back there to what they did, and God is finally coming back and God is finally bringing punishment on them. Earlier, they also said pretty much the same thing when they said that it's God who's done this to us. It's God that has brought this on us because of what we have done. You see, they've been hiding something for a long time. And yet it's still on the surface. You think how long ago that took place and how big of a thing it was way back there. But they've been living and they've been hiding that. That's a consequence of unconfessed sin. You might think, well, I won't feel so bad about it next week and next month and next year. But a spiritual reality is when you have unconfessed sin, it will always be there and it will always hurt you and it will always affect you. And the only way to take care of it, we know, is to confess it. Get it out before God and turn from it. Repentance, confessing and repenting, turning away from it, telling God we're sorry, and asking God to forgive us. But these brothers are still dealing with that. They're dealing with this lie that they have told and they have held on to and they've allowed to continue to live in the heart of their father, especially. Yet right there on the surface, the feelings are there. The guilt is there. It's the presence of unconfessed sin. It's been hidden. They've been keeping the truth from their father, only giving him partial information. And in some ways you think, well, that was a terrible sin against Joseph, and it was. It was also a terrible sin against their father, also giving the father the wrong information. In some ways, Jacob, who's now called Israel, is bearing the pain of their lie. And he's been carrying, knowing that it wasn't right, knowing that something was wrong with it, not really knowing what happened to Joseph. Well, the blood was on the coat, and so it must be that this happened, but maybe Jacob did come to believe, or he believed that Joseph was dead. He keeps saying, "My son is gone. My son is gone. He's dead." Look at Jacob's reaction to hearing what happened in Egypt. And I think this is kind of interesting. How does Jacob respond when the brothers tell him what happened? Verse 6 says, "Israel asked, 'Why did you bring this trouble on me by telling the man you had another brother?'" I mean, he's saying, "Well, why did you tell him you had a brother back home? What's the matter with you guys? What are you thinking? Why'd you tell him that?" Well, the reason they told him that, because it was on their conscience. And they couldn't get away from the story and the truth of the story. And whether they told the truth there, they were wrestling with their conscience too. And Jacob says, "Well, why'd you tell him that? That was a foolish thing to do. That was stupid." Also, in chapter 42, verse 35, just up there it says, "As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, 'You have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me.'" Again, you hear the heart of the father, the favoritism for sure, but the pain of a father. He's lost a son already and now he's lost his second son. "And you want to take the only son left of my wife, Rachel?" So you hear the pain within Jacob. Jacob is paying for his favoritism, you might would say, and he is dealing with that and what had come from there. I notice again in this story, and it happened several times, is that Reuben, the firstborn, is the one who tries to do what's right. We said last time we read his part in the story and how Reuben was a firstborn and he tried to do what was right. And back when they sold Joseph into slavery, and Reuben, it happened when Reuben was not there, and when he came back and found out he was gone, he ripped his clothes. And the problem with Reuben is then he also became a part of the lie. He wasn't responsible for the selling of Joseph into slavery, but he was responsible for the lie. And now, as the story develops, and 20 years later, you see again the emergence of Reuben, this time as a defender, this time as a leader. This man, he first tried to convince Jacob to let them go back for food and for Simeon. Then Reuben, verse 37, said to his father, "You may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you and trust him to my care, and I will bring him back." Boy, those are strong words, and that opens up some other things, but you can hear the heart of Reuben anyway. He said, "Father, I'll take full responsibility. I'll take full responsibility for the family. Let me go and get Simeon. Let me go, and I'll bring Benjamin back to you. And my reputation, my life, my sons, my future. I say, Father, let me do this." And he's again trying to do what's right in this story. And at that point, Jacob says no. He says, "No, I've already lost two of my sons, and I don't want to lose another." And Jacob says no, and so the brothers honor that, and the famine continues. And then we have this break between chapter 42 and 43. How long? I don't know. Could have been months. It might have been years. They probably brought quite a bit of grain back to make bread. And so you would think, I don't know how many grandchildren, great-grandchildren there were at this time, but it had to be some time, and I would think at least into the next year. I could be wrong, but it doesn't really give us a reference. But there's a break between chapter 42 and chapter 43. They think it's time to go back, and they're starting to get hungry, and the food is going, the grain is running out, and you have that break between chapter 4 and 43, 42 and 43, and Jacob says, "No, you can't go. We're going to starve to death. You can't go, but you cannot take Benjamin." And so as they get hungrier, now the famine, verse 40, chapter 43 says, "Now the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. Jacob says, I know that we've got to get grain. We've got to get food. And then the brothers say, well, we have to take Benjamin. And then Jacob, no, I don't want you to take Benjamin. Then someone else steps up, Judah. What a story Judah is. The lion of the tribe of Judah, the descendant of Judah, Jesus himself. And yet this man, when you read the stories in Genesis of him, his life doesn't seem very noble in places and at a particular place in a story with Tamar in prior chapters. But here in this chapter, what does he do? He speaks up as one of the older brothers. And he says to Israel, his father, in verse 8, send the boy along with me, and we will go at once, so that you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, I will bear the blame before you all of my life. Again, here's a second son saying to Jacob, saying to Israel, that calling the father, say, I'll take responsibility. Again, the sons are taking, it's the opposite of what it was when they sold their brother into slavery. Now they're taking responsibility for their brothers and what they are doing. And so Jacob consents to the request of Judah, and they go to Egypt for a second time, this time with Benjamin. And so this is the second journey, and they get there, and then they meet the official, and Joseph knows about that, and Joseph tells the official, I want you to take them to my house, and I want you to prepare a great meal for them. You just imagine what they must have thought of that. Taken to Joseph's house, I mean, you would think how scared they were already. So they get there, and the servant says, I want you all to follow me, and we're going to go, and you're going to go to this man's house. Remember, Joseph is the second in command in Egypt. Whatever they called him, I don't know. Go to Joseph's house. Can you imagine what they thought about that? A great meal is being prepared for you. It's like, for us? And right away, they begin again to think about the past. They think about what they have done. They think about, well, this is God going to bring his judgment on us. And they had to wonder why. Why would this Egyptian leader want us to come to their house? So they begin to think about it. He's planning to make us slaves. He's planning to attack us. And he wants to attack us and overpower us and seize us as slaves and take our donkeys. They're afraid. They know what's happened in the past. They know the power of this man, and they've heard his words before. And so they're asking why. They don't understand why. And so why would they be eating with Pharaoh's second in command? Were they being set up to be killed, to be robbed, to be sold into slavery? Already their brother's gone. Simeon, they don't know where he's at. They're scared to death. They don't know what's going to happen. Simeon is a prisoner. Would Benjamin be next? Would they be next? Would this be the end? The guilt. All this coming to a head. And so what do? They go and they plead with Joseph's servant. They say, can we talk to you for a minute? You know, the man that they've dealt with all along. And can we tell you that we're innocent, and the silver was put back in, and we don't know where it came from, and it wasn't us. And you know, they're pleading for their lives. They think that probably this is the end. So they plead to the servant. He said, help us. We're not spies. We didn't do it. We didn't take the silver. They call out to the, can you imagine what the steward was thinking about all this? I'm kind of thinking of the steward from chapter 42 through the end of the story. Can you imagine what Joseph's servants were thinking? Especially when they hear Joseph look at these men who have come and asked to buy grain, and he says, you're spies! And here's Joseph, who has been such a great leader in Egypt. They probably thought, well, boy, how did he know that? Joseph is very smart. He's seen something. He's identified something in these Hebrews. I mean, we have that little clip later on where it says that it would be detestable for an Egyptian to work to eat with a Hebrew. You know how they felt about Hebrews. So when Joseph said, "You're spies," I can just see the servants saying, "Wow, our man Joseph, he really understood. He saw what we did, and he must be very smart." I wonder if they kind of got confused, though, from there. Can you imagine what his servants were thinking? First of all, "You're spies." And then Joseph tells them to go and fill their bags with grain and put the silver back in. What? Say what, Joseph? First you said they're spies, and then you say in chapter 42, verse 25, okay, what I want you to do, if I can find the verse, I'll read it quickly. "Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in a sack, and to give them provisions for their journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left." I wonder what the stewards felt at this point. Spies? I mean, Joseph really seems to believe that. He kept one of the brothers as a prisoner. But he said, "Put the silver back in." I wonder what they thought about that. Oh, then they come back, finally, a year later, or whatever it was, 6 months or 2 years. Maybe they thought, well, Joseph is generous. He's a fair man. He gave him a test. Joseph said, "I'm going to prove whether you're spies or not, and this is how we're going to do it. You're going to leave your brother here, and you're going to go back, and you're going to bring me that one you told me about. And if you do that, then I'll know that you're telling the truth. And if not, then..." And maybe they thought, well, Joseph was being very fair here to these men who came for grain, and he didn't want their families and their children to starve to death. So, my boss, Joseph, number one, he saw that they were spies. That was pretty good that he picked them out. But then, secondly, he's a just man. And so he gives them grain and plenty of food, and he puts the silver back in the bag. Wonder what they thought at that point. So then, a year and a half later, whatever, they come back, and Joseph tells them, when he gets there, he gives orders to the servant. He knows, he somehow found out that they're back, and he says, "Okay, I want you to take them to my house." What'd you say? Take them to your house? I mean, this is the second guy in Egypt. He just doesn't have strangers over all the time. You know, I just imagine what they were thinking. Your house? Okay. Whatever you say, boss. Okay, I want you to take an animal and I want you to slaughter it and make a big meal. For them? Those spies? Okay, whatever you say, you know. Okay. And then verse 44, which we'll look at next time. "Now Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of his house. Fill the men's sacks with as much food as they can carry and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for the grain." You wonder how they were seeing this story. And I have a point in saying that. I wonder what the stewards were thinking. Well, somewhere along the way, though, I noticed the steward came to know who Joseph really was and what he believed about God. Somewhere along the way, I think, as I look at the story, Joseph has communicated something about his God to his servant. Somewhere along the way, Joseph has communicated that his God is not the Egyptian God, but his God is another God. His God is the Hebrew God. And this is why I think that. Somewhere along the way, Joseph has communicated with his servant that he honors and believes in and follows the Hebrew God. Look at chapter 43, verse 23, and I'll read the response of the servant. Here the brothers come in and they say, They find the servant and listen to us. We haven't done anything wrong and we didn't steal that silver. They're trying to plead for their lives. And what does the servant say in verse 23? "It's all right." He said, "Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given you treasure in your sacks." Almost like the servant said, "You know what? We know about your God. We know where you came from. We know your father's God." They seem to know a lot about the God of these men. And I think somewhere along the way, the influence of Joseph probably has been seen in these servants' lives. They had to have been confused about all this stuff. But when you look at that, it tells me that Joseph had lived it out somehow in a way of integrity. And so these men, the servant, had confidence in the faith of Joseph. Maybe in the faith that Joseph would do the right thing. When he said, hide the cup in Benjamin's sack, they might have thought, well, why? But they did it. They were told to. The steward was working with Joseph. Perhaps. Not yet knowing the whole story, but we see in this a glimpse of the faith and the influence of Joseph. And so the banquet is held. The animal prepared. That would have taken a while, several hours anyway. And so they come to the banquet, and the brothers get all their gifts ready. They want everything to be perfectly lined out when Joseph comes home. Boy, they want to make sure right at 12 o'clock that they're ready to give to Joseph all the stuff, you know, and make sure that he's happy with them, you know. It says, when Joseph came home, they presented to him the gifts they had brought into the house, and they bowed down before him to the ground. He asked them how they were, and then he said, how is your aged father you told me about? Is he still living? He might have. He knew him. Yep, I think that's very possible. That's very possible. It doesn't tell us that, but I think that's very possible, that they knew. They by now they knew, perhaps. If he didn't, the only reason I think maybe not, because in chapter 45, Joseph sends his servant out when he revealed himself to his brothers, and I wonder if they already knew it, why he did that. But I wondered that. It's possible that he knew. So we come to this, to the dinner, to the banquet, and what does Joseph ask? Is your father well? What's on his mind? What's in his heart? Is your father well? Then it says that he looks at Benjamin and says, is this your brother that you told me about? And it's when he sees his brother. I don't know. I'm not sure if Benjamin was alive when Joseph was taken to slavery. There's not. Presumably he was a little tiny boy or baby because Rachel had already died and they had settled in Canaan, but it had to have been, he was probably very small. He would have had to have been a young man though by this time, but compared to his brothers, he was a little boy. Probably in his late teens or early 20s, probably. And to him, he was the son. His own, and he looked around and saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son. And he asked, is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about? And then he said, God be gracious to you, my son. The first blessing that Joseph gives to his family, it's the first step, is first he blesses Benjamin. And somehow, in blessing Benjamin, it kind of unleashes. He took a step. Benjamin was not responsible for what happened to him. He knew that. But he started where he could. He started with the blessing of Benjamin. He said, God be gracious to you, my son. He saw Benjamin as his own son. He knew that it was almost the next generation down. And he had great love and affection for Benjamin. Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. Again, he just couldn't hold it anymore. He had to get it out. He did. He went somewhere where they couldn't see him, couldn't hear him. And he let it all out. Then he washed his face. You know, sometimes we deal with stuff that we have to go somewhere and weep, whether it's physically or emotionally or maybe in relationship, and we've got to get away and we've got to say, God, help me to get through this. Help me to bear this. Help me to know what to do. Help me to know how to handle this. And so that's what Joseph did. He went and he wept. He took the time to weep. He didn't, seems like he didn't say, no, I'm not allowed to do this, but he wept. Better you than me. And so he wept. And then he gathered himself, washed his face, and came out. And he said, serve the food. And they did. The steward was working with Joseph. They served the food. And they look at each other. I notice it says the sons look at each other in astonishment. Why? There were two reasons. And I'm not sure I understand the one. But it says, the men have been seated before him in the order of their ages, from the firstborn to the youngest, and they looked at each other in astonishment. I wondered, why did they look at each other in astonishment? That they were seated by birth order, which was a big deal, or I wonder, could it be that the Egyptians knew their birth order? I wondered that. I don't know. It doesn't say, but I wondered if Joseph had told him, okay, that guy over there, he sits there, that guy over there, he sits there, that guy over there, he sits there, that guy sits there, he's there, he's there, and I want Benjamin right here. And I don't know, I just, a little speculate, but I wonder if it's like that, because they were astonished. How did that happen? How did they know our birth order? Maybe they asked, I don't know, but that question makes me wonder that. They looked at each other in astonishment when they were seated. Wow. They were astonished by something. Because after that, then we read in verse 34 that Benjamin received his five portions. So I don't think that was saying that they were astonished that Benjamin received the five portions, although they probably were. That comes later. When portions were served to them from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's. If I can figure out the five, I'm still working on that. Why five? But here's this boy, young man. The brothers are all sweaty and nervous about getting him back home to dad, who's going to come unglued and die if he doesn't. And there, Benjamin is picked out for five portions. Wow, you wonder what they thought. You wonder what they were thinking and dealing with. So they feasted and drank freely with him. Maybe they were greatly relieved. Well, they were afraid maybe this guy was going to take Benjamin, take him from him, make him a slave, saying, hey, I'm going to take your youngest brother. You're going to have the food and go back to Canaan land. I don't know. But what an amazing story.